Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
1.2 seconds remaining. Bruins down by a goal.
They're going to bump it to Pastrnak for a one-timer if they win it.
Bergeron in for the draw. Bruins win it. Marchand shoots. Anderson the save. And Zaitsev falls on top of the puck and the horn sounds. The Toronto Maple Leafs score twice in the third period. Freddie Anderson stops 28 of 29. And the Toronto Maple Leafs move back in front of the series 3-2. And game 6 will take place on Easter Sunday at the Scotiabank Arena.
Right, welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Ryan Johnston, joined by Judd Zerai and Bob Beers, who you heard calling the end of that game last night, here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, as the Bruins get pushed to the brink of elimination with a 2-1 loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Good morning, guys. How we doing?
Tough morning right now.
Yeah, tough morning is right. What's going on? I mean, what are we seeing here? We knew this was a tough series. I mean, you know, for all the talk about Bruins playing Tampa in the second round, we knew this was a difficult test against this Toronto team. But what have we seen in the first five games? Why is this going this way?
Well, first of all, you've got two 100-point teams playing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to understand. And so you come into the series saying, okay, what is Toronto's weakness? Team defense. You can attack them and get to them in their own zone because they don't want to play defense. They don't know how to play defense. They just want to score, and that's how they're going to win games. Well, we've seen a Toronto team that's bought in to playing team defense and have been completely committed as a five-man unit to playing good team defense. Their back-checking is strong. Their play in the defensive zone is strong. They don't give up a lot in that end. The Bruins couldn't get, and I'm just going by, I'm trying to go the whole series. You know, there's been times where the Bruins have gotten free, but I give Toronto a ton of credit for what they've done on the defensive side of the puck and limiting the Bruins' opportunities. Now, that being said, all right, the Bruins seem to be lacking another gear. And I'm not sure why. And you know, and it's not just one guy or two guys. It's a number of guys who seem to be lacking that extra gear. And it's there from shift to shift every once in a while. And it's there from game to game every once in a while. But on a consistent basis, it seems to be lacking. You know, you go into last night's game, and it's scoreless after two periods, and there's really not a lot going on. Neither team generated great chances in the first 40 minutes of that game. And I think both teams kind of settled into, we're going to be committed to playing good team defense, and we'll see how, you know, you don't kind of go into a game saying, all right, this, we're not going to score for 40 minutes.
Right, let's try and keep this scoreless.
You play the game that's presented to you, you know. And I heard you saying before that you wanted to see them come out like they did in game two. So did I. It wasn't there for whatever reason. There's a number of things you could probably point to, but it wasn't there for either team, really. It was more of a, you know, I thought the Toronto Maple Leafs played a very intelligent road game, and they made it hard for the Bruins to get anything accomplished, and the Bruins didn't have an extra gear to pull themselves out of it. So you've got two good teams. Toronto, we underestimated the way they played defense, and rightfully so. They didn't play defense all season.
Right. It's not like this has been we've seen.
But Mike Babcock and his coaching staff and the leaders of that team have bought into the fact that we need to be way better in certain areas in order to win hockey games. If we're going to beat the Bruins, we can't be as loose as we've been in the regular season. They've bought in, and they've been good in that area.
Forwards have done a great job for the Maple Leafs, coming down low and helping out. How often have we seen during the course of the series across the five games, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, even William Nylander, who's had to shift to the middle because of the suspension of Nazem Kadri, coming back to try and help out so they can break back pucks. But to get back to Bob's point, as well as the Leafs played defensively, I think in a lot of ways that focuses the decision-making on the Bruins. When you have the opportunities, where are you putting the puck? In the first period, a lot of pucks wound up behind the net to Freddie Anderson, who set it up for the defense or set it up for one of the forwards, and out they came.
It was one and done for the Bruins, Judd, right? I mean, you know, even when they did get shots, it was one and done.
Yep.
But then when they were dumping pucks in, he'd go back, set it up, move the puck, one pass to the D, out of the zone. They couldn't establish any forecheck. And that was early, you know, I mean, and that was in the first period.
David Backes admitted to us during the first intermission, we were stubborn with a lot of our decisions in that first period. You know, they may have had some opportunities and gathered a little bit of momentum, even though they didn't score on that first power play in the first period. But he said we were stubborn. So you needed some of that to change in order to generate the type of pressure and the rotation that you wanted. You were unable to do it.
Well, that's been kind of one of the things that has stood out to me throughout the course of the series is that the Bruins typically are a good puck possession team. They don't make the kind of mistakes that we've seen them make. You know, a caller pointed out earlier this morning about, you know, breaking out of the zone. It seems like sometimes the Bruins are just comfortable just to get the puck out of the zone, even when they're not getting pressured.
That's for anybody. Well, yeah, I mean,
you know,
when you're not pressured, yeah, that's an issue. But, you know, there's pressure. They're bringing pressure more often than not. I actually thought the Bruins did a decent job at times last night. You know, there was a lot of reverses, they were able to move the puck out of the zone. There was a couple instances, you know, John Moore had the puck at one time. I don't know how long he actually had the puck on his stick, but, and there was kind of nothing going on. Both teams complained about ice conditions yesterday, and you saw a lot of bounces. You know, the pass down to Marchand at the goal line, he wants to one touch it out to Bergeron in the slot. He's got a well executed play set up there on the power play, and it bounces just before it hits his stick, hits the top of his stick, goes up into the netting. Torrey Krug trying to make a one touch pass on a bouncing puck coming back to the point leads to a breakaway going back the other way. So, you know, I thought it was really warm in the building. Of course, it was really humid yesterday. We kind of stay off it because it's both teams that have to deal with it, but energy level, hot building, you know, I mean, who knows, but neither team seemed to have a ton of jump through the two periods, right? And it seemed
in
like,
a game five, you expected more.
Right.
I mean, that's it. That's, you know, the first period ended. I kind of thought, like, this doesn't feel like a pivotal game five in a tie series right now. It didn't have that level of intensity.
It settled into, okay, we're not making mistakes. You know, we're going to limit mistakes and we're going to make sure that we're checking. I mean, when I say checking, you know, checking with your feet, getting back and getting in guys' faces and being all over them. You know, Bruins coming into the zone. You've got D standing up and trying to make plays there. You've got forwards coming back and tracking and getting to them. And I thought, you know, Bruce Cassidy had to shorten his bench early. And that's alarming, you know, because he didn't feel certain guys were going. And he started to do it, well, maybe late in the first, but definitely in the second and third period, he'd shortened his bench, and there were certain guys that did not see a lot of ice time in that game.
And Backes played 4.5 minutes.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, Achari got less ice time as the game went on, and especially in the second period. Heinen got less ice time in the second and then more ice time in the third. So, but he was ineffective on the top line in the first period, a couple of occasions coming over the blue line. You know, where you're looking for him to make a little bit better play, and he wasn't there. So, what does Bruce Cassidy do now? And that's the big question, man. What are your options? You need more out of the guys that are there, but what are your options in terms of lineup? And, you know, I don't think the D makes any changes, but up front, you're looking for answers. You get Corrali back. He had some good energy last night. He was a little rusty, as to be expected, but he brought the energy. Where do you put Pastrnak? Do you put him back up with Bergeron? Or do you keep him there the way like he was in the second and third period? Who do you put with Krejci? I mean, you're the same questions again that we've had since the beginning. And he's moved guys around trying to find the spark and some jump. And what are you getting from the bottom two lines? You know, I mean, Coyle had some good jump at you know, times in that game, a lot of times in that game. But where's everybody else fit in order to get the most out of him? And that's something that they're in long discussions, as I'm sure, about today, trying to figure out the best formula.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, it's not like Cassidy hasn't tried, you know, bouncing guys around. He's flailing around looking for answers like everybody else is right now.
Toronto hasn't changed their lineup, other than Kadri coming out.
Yeah.
And Ennis going in on the fourth line and then Nylander in the third line center. I don't think he's changed his lineup at all.
I think you can make an argument that the Leafs are better without Kadri in the lineup. Honestly, I do believe that. But I'm sure that one of the big conversations is, so as we look across the five games, one of the big themes for the Bruins has been, we've got to be harder on pucks. I'm sure we're going to talk ad nauseum about the goaltender interference call and the decision that was made. But it was Zach Hyman who wins a battle in order to create that opportunity. Hard on pucks. You know, at times during the series, it's gone back and forth. Toronto wins a battle, creates an opportunity, ultimately score the opening goal. So that's one of the things that's been talked about. The other thing that Bruce Cassidy talked about, and he talked about it again last night, we have passed up on shot opportunities on Freddie Anderson, which breaks down their coverage. That's one of the things that the Bruins did effectively in Game 4. Shot the puck effectively. Puck retrieval is one of the strengths of Marchand, Bergeron, and if they're playing together, Pastrnak. But that group, that duo of Marchand and Bergeron, one of the things that they do well is puck retrieval. There weren't great decisions with the puck. Where are you putting those pucks if you're shooting it on Freddie Anderson? You putting it high? You putting it low? Where are you putting it? And are you putting it based on where you have an attacking forward?
You shoot with a purpose. Everything you do is with a purpose.
Sure.
All right. So if you're taking a shot on Anderson, you know, unless it's a point blank great chance, you're probably not scoring. So you're shooting with a purpose. You're shooting to create a rebound. You're shooting to create a loose puck. More often than not, I mean, you know, you don't want that puck up in his chest and he's just grabbing it or he's catching it, and there is no rebound on those opportunities. Nobody in front. You're not shooting for a tip in front. So you're shooting with a purpose. You're dumping the puck in with a purpose. You know, everything you do on the ice over the 200 feet is with a purpose, trying to you know, lead to the next play. And especially early on in the game, I mean, there was some desperation level raised in the third period, but early on in the game, it didn't seem like it was on mentally, you know, and what they were doing, some of the things going up the ice
and
entering the zone.
And it was funny because listening to Brandon Carlo, who was on when Bob had him on in the second intermission, you can start to hear a little bit of the game plan start to dribble out of the Bruins, that one of the things that the Bruins feel is like Freddie Anderson is susceptible to rebounds. Okay, well, that means you have to focus on where you're putting pucks. And the other thing that we have talked about, it's not that it's not hard to get to the inside, but you shouldn't be fearful of getting to the inside. It's not like you have somebody in, you know,
there's nobody in that lineup.
That's
going to punish you, right?
No, I mean, you know, Muzzin's a physical guy, but there's nobody in that lineup.
But he's not so intimidating that it would cause you to think twice to go to the front of the net. So here we are talking about things, and I'm sure that the coaching staff is probably talking about some similar things, obviously in greater detail, that the Bruins can execute. But that's what it comes down to. Can they execute that in Game 6?
All right, let's go to Jimmy in Warwick to lead things off. Good morning, Jimmy. You're up on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey guys, how you doing? I love the show. I think we can all agree that the first line back checking the knot needs to perform better. But I wanted to talk about how you think the loss of Kevin Miller is affecting the team, because I don't think Moore, Clifton, or anybody else they put in there for that matter is getting the job done. We're getting the puck out of our zone. They're spending way too much time in our zone. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
I appreciate the call.
I've said that from the start. I mean, I'm a big fan of Kevin Miller. Unfortunately, he's had some injuries this year. When he's playing and playing full time, he's improved his skating over the last few years to become a powerful skater. And he makes an impact with that skating. He can get the puck out of the zone, and him along with Grizzlick, who he probably would have been playing with, you know, those guys can defend. Grizzlick can move his feet. He makes good plays. He makes good reads. Miller was playing a little bit higher up last year, and I think it was Miller and Krug that were exposed a bit in the series against Toronto. But they were the second pairing because of injuries you had on your back end. So, you know, if you've got Miller and Grizzlick maybe as that second pairing or second, you know, slash third pairing. I mean, you know, you play them kind of interchangeable with Carlo and Krug, and it's very effective for him. And you know, Moore's coming off of his injury, so, you know, he hasn't been as strong here coming back. Yeah, not having Kevin Miller, physical presence.
I was going to say, the physicality that he brings, the fear factor.
Yeah. I mean, guys know when he's on the ice, guys know that they're going to pay the price, whether in the corner, in front of the net. He brings a lot of that to the team, and you know, it just adds another element, adds another layer for them that they're missing right now.
All right, we'll get to plenty more of your calls coming up over the 2 hours this morning. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He's gone!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Everything's on the line now. Missed opportunity tonight. Like I said, it's not much we can do right now, right, about tonight's game. So now it's about moving forward and be ready for hanging on the plane tomorrow and then going to Toronto and be ready for a big game.
Missed opportunity. It's an interesting way to put that. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985. Before we get back to the calls, let's talk about the review last night. First goal of the game, interference challenge by the Bruins. The announcement gets made, the goal will stand. This is what the NHL Situation Room said. After reviewing all available replays and consulting with the referees, the Situation Room confirmed the referee's call on the ice. The decision was made in accordance to Rule 78.7 that states, in part, if a review is not conclusive and/or there is any doubt whatsoever as to whether the call on the ice was correct, the original call on the ice will be confirmed. Therefore, the call on the ice stands. Good goal, Toronto Maple Leafs. That was the explanation.
Why was there no doubt?
It's an inconclusive evidence.
All right, which box do you need to check? Did he get pushed into Rask? No. In fact, Hyman pushed off of McAvoy.
Pushed off of McAvoy and backed
went
into him,
backwards yep. into Rask. Was Rask in the blue paint?
Yep.
Yes. And the contact was being made as the pass was being made and prevents him from getting over, or partially prevents him from getting over. Who knows if he makes a save or not, if there's no contact? I don't know. We don't know.
But he's been denied the opportunity to make that play, right?
He was impacted.
Yeah.
And I don't know, what are you looking for? I think that's the definition of goalie interference. If he gets pushed in, I get it. Hey, live with it. It's a goal. He didn't get pushed in. He went in on his own. And he made contact with the goaltender as the pass is being made across. I was watching it last night and going, they're not, we were saying it during a commercial break. You knew that they weren't going to turn that over. And it's they butchered it. I don't know if they win. I don't. I don't know. Who knows if they win?
Right.
But it's a nothing game in the third period of game five. And you make contact with the goaltender without being pushed in the crease. I don't know how you allow that goal.
I want to go one step further. Not sure. They got hosed on that one. This is the playoffs. This is a goal that could ultimately decide the series. Mm-hmm. I think there has to be a greater threshold for the explanation that we get from the National Hockey League. Explain to me where the doubt comes in. What are you doubting? Because you can't play mind reader whether or not Matthews would have scored anyway. You can't play that. You have to explain to me why there is a doubt that Zach Hyman did not interfere with Tuukka Rask. Moreover, right. And if you're Rask, you can't embellish the play because you can't take the chance at that point what the call is going to be. You have to continue to play your position. Maybe if he falls down, it would have highlighted things and Dan O'Halloran back there would have waved things off. That did not happen. I don't blame Rask. He's got to continue to play. But the threshold has to be higher. The explanation has to be better. I thought it was fascinating. Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet said, I don't know if I've ever seen an explanation that the Situation Room has sent out underscored the way it was.
Yeah, it was. It was underlined.
Game five.
They underlined any doubt whatsoever. That's what they actually underlined that in their explanation. They underline the part about there being any doubt whatsoever.
And I find it fascinating. So the other goaltenders around the National Hockey League, whether it's former goalie Marty Biron or Cam Talbot, who's now in Philadelphia, they've come out and they've blasted the opinion and asking, why isn't there a goaltender that's in the Situation Room who can give you a better idea of what goaltender interference is or is not?
Yeah, I think that's part of the point during the course of that sequence last night.
Because if there's a goalie in there, every play would be goalie interference.
Right. Goalies do tend to stick up for each other. But I think,
well, maybe you need that voice.
Right. I think as that was playing out last night, it is easy to look at that play and say, well, Matthews is scoring that goal either way.
You can't make that assumption. No.
Of what you're reviewing. You have to say, did the goaltender have the opportunity to make the play or not? And if he doesn't get bumped, he has a better opportunity to make that play.
As soon as there's contact, the whistle should go. As soon as there's contact in the blue print, whistle should go. And you can say incidental contact. No penalty. Not goalie interference.
Right,
just incidental contact.
Yeah.
Faceoff comes outside the zone. So if they don't see that real time, I don't know how you allow it once you watch it over and over again on replay. And it's not just that call is from Toronto, by the way, where the situation room is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the referees. They consult with the referees, but that call has been taken out of the referees' hands. That call is ultimately made in Toronto.
And this,
they're talking with them. They got them on headset.
Yep.
But that final decision is made in Toronto.
And the other thing is, that's a play that we do see with somewhat regularity around the season, around the regular season. I think Bob put it perfectly, I think, when we were off the air. He hits him accidentally on purpose. Guy in front of the net.
Knows what he's doing. Sure.
Leans back, somehow brushes Rask. Anything he can do to impede his ability to make the save. And the call wasn't made.
All right, let's go to Frank the Tank. You're up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen.
Frank, it's been a long time.
Yes, it has. I'm sorry about that, but, due to work or whatever, I listen to you guys religiously every Saturday, but sometimes I'm just not able to call in. I'm disappointed about that, but I listen every Saturday, guys. Trust me, I'm always listening.
Oh, good to hear from you.
Appreciate
now.
That.
I hope you guys have a good Easter, by the way. Look, you know, I am extremely pissed off. To the point where, name all the cliches, you know, kick your neighbor's dog, punch an 8-year-old, you name it. I just, it's very upsetting what's going on in the series right now. But I said it at the beginning of the series, do not sleep on this Toronto team. They are good. Their defense does suck. Even though in this series it hasn't been that way all the time. You look at game two, the Bruins were all over them. It can be done. And I said it to myself last night, if the Bruins lose this game, they're going to lose the series. And that's the way I'm feeling right now. But this team has responded all year long. They need to get up to Toronto, play physical, get on this defense and show the world how bad they really are. And then pray for some luck on game seven. But to this point, gentlemen, it's nothing but a disappointment.
I appreciate the call, Frank, and lock up your 8-year-olds if they're they're around Frank today, apparently. At this point, you go up and you win game six, right? I mean, you go up and you put the effort in, you win game six, and you're on home ice for game seven. And at that point, it's all up for grabs. So that's all you can ask. Let's grab Chuck in the car before we get to the headlines. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up?
Hey, I just want to talk about, I think Charlie Coyle, that in all this line shuffling that's been going on to get lines one and two going, he's been penalized, I guess, having to play with so many different wings. What are your thoughts on putting him on right wing with Krejci? Open the ice up a little bit for Krejci and either put Johansson or maybe even DeBrusk on left wing with them and get two lines going, and you have Corrali back to be your third line center, and I guess Ichara to be your fourth. What do you think, guys?
I appreciate the call, Chuck.
Yeah, I think anything's in play right now. They've tried Coyle on the wing a bit, but mixed results, but I think Coyle's been good in this series. He's been one of their better forwards.
It's been a quality addition.
Yeah, no, he has, and he's done some real good things. You know, in an effort to have three lines, you know, you've got him as the third line center. That's where they envisioned him playing right from the start. But, you know, you might see him up a little bit on with Krejci. Heck, you might even see him with Bergeron. I mean, I think anything's in play right now in desperation time. Do you maybe even move Corrali into third line center role, something like that, and try to go about it that way? I'm very curious to see what Bruce Cassidy and his staff pull out for tomorrow. And, you know, we're not going to see a lot. I don't know what they'll do today. They might skate today because there's not going to be any morning skate tomorrow with a 3:00 game. So you might have an indication later this morning or early this afternoon when they do hit the ice, but I don't know if everybody skates or not. So I think he keeps that pretty quiet and under wraps. And I think there's going to be a lot of soul searching here over the next, 24 hours to figure out exactly what your lineup's going to look like and then how you deploy guys. So anything's in play, and if you want to move Coyle up to a wing, I get it. I don't know if that's the right move or not, but you've got to try a few different things right now.
And it might not be even something that they start, but if the game doesn't start the way they want it, I mean, that's a possibility. Because he has been one of your more consistent guys.
They started the season looking for a third-line center and a second-line right wing.
And they're still there.
No, they got the third-line center.
Yeah.
But they don't have a wing with Krejci. And they've tried how many different players in that spot this season, and it's still an open thing. I mean, you haven't had anybody that's filled it.
I think all bets are off because it's the playoffs in the past. And again, if you watch, you know, Bruce Cassidy's a head coach. He has prized continuity when the opportunity's there. This is the playoffs, so that can change. You'd love to see if you can get a little bit more productivity out of Jake DeBrusque. He looked like he had a little bit more jump in his game, but it's been off and on for Jake during the course of the series. And obviously he got cross-checked in the head.
I kind of wonder about his health.
So I'm sure everybody is playing through something at this point. He is certainly going through it. If they're able to find some productivity from a guy like DeBrusque in game six, I think that's going to be meaningful. I think the other thing that comes to mind, since the Bruins are going up to play game six, not only were you able to win game four there, but Toronto was a better road team all season long. They have not played their best hockey at home this year.
All right, we'll continue with Judd and Bob in studio. Billy Jaffe going to check in with us coming up next after the Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show Playoff Edition.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zarat, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. We'll get back to more of your calls coming up here in just a bit. Right now, though, we welcome in Billy Jaffe, of course, part of the Nesson crew covering the series, but also branching out into other things as well, including Caps Canes game tonight. We'll talk with him a little bit about that, but he joins us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. How's everybody doing this morning? I won't say this bright and cheery morning by any means, but how's everybody doing?
It's gray and drizzly outside. It's perfect weather for how we're feeling this morning. Well, let's start with this, because we talked with you about things going on around the league. And we were talking in the last segment about the review last night on the Matthews goal. There was another goaltender interference review in the Calgary game last night. Calgary had a goal stripped off of the board because of it en route to their loss and getting bounced down to the playoffs. Is there consistency on these calls? I mean, what are we seeing around the league as far as these interference calls? And is there any set standard that we feel like they're following?
Well, is there a set standard? I mean, I guess reviewing interference is in the eye of the beholder, in the eye of the situation room. They think that certain things are, I don't know. I mean, no, there isn't a set standard. How about that? You know, because if you base it off of last night's game where Calgary had a goal and there was contact around the net, the player came around the side of the net, and you call on the ice, was no goal, and the review was upheld, no goal. And it seemed it was not the exact similar play to Hyman touching Tuukka, but there seemed to be the same amount of contact in the sense of, and the same, theory behind it. If the goalie can't fully play his position cleanly, clearly, easily, play the position, then it's no goal. I said on Nesson last night afterwards. I don't think that, I didn't know which way that one would go last night. I don't know if Bears and Jets felt the same way. I didn't know how it would go because I've seen more called goal interference and less not called. I didn't know which way it was going to go, and that's the conundrum that we're in right now.
All right, well, putting that aside, let's talk about what's going on in the playoffs at this point, because the number one seeds in both the East and the West are out. The Bruins are up against it here in round one. Almost none of these series are going according to seeding at this point. What's happening?
it's happening. What's happening is that it's happening, meaning not that the regular season means nothing, but it doesn't mean nearly as much, perhaps, as we put the stock into it. What's happening is that youth and speed are winning, structured teams are winning, and guys with high skill, players with some with very high skill but don't have maybe as big of motors as some other teams, aren't winning. And, you know, we haven't seen goalies have to steal series yet. I mean, the Islanders was a dominant series. Colorado ended up being a dominant series, but it wasn't stolen by Philip Grubauer, who played well. But it was all about Nathan MacKinnon and Landeskog and Rantanen, and how about the debut of Cale Makar and Tyson Barrie playing fast. I mean, these guys were just all over them. And, you know, obviously Columbus and Tampa. I mean, Tampa could not handle the adversity. The injury with Hedman or to Hedman, I think, was too big of an adversity or adversarial type event for them to overcome. And guys like Kucherov and Stamkos, who had space during the regular season, didn't have it in the playoffs, and they couldn't deal with that. And what are we seeing? We're seeing the teams believe RJ and the fellas. If they get in, they believe. That's what it comes down to. This is the first time in history that both eight seeds have lost in the first round. I'm afraid your pardon. Both one seeds have lost in the first round of eight seeds. It's amazing what we're seeing right now.
And I also think it helped teams like Columbus and Colorado that had to play playoff hockey before we began in April. I think that they were ready to go, or more ready than their opponent heading into the first round.
I wouldn't disagree. You know, there's something to be said for that. There's something that, you know, sometimes people say, well, geez, they were so tired by the time they got to the first round. But I agree in this regard. I think that you've got one of the best players in the, you know, in the world, and a guy like Nathan MacKinnon not getting away from the Columbus series, perhaps you're talking about Joe, but you got MacKinnon who's just, you know, rocketed up, you know, the charts, so to speak, the way he's playing. And Columbus, yeah, they had to play. They also, maybe, I don't know, maybe they just needed to finally have three or four games where they really, at the end of the season, Joe, where they had to really get to know each other. They finally got chemistry after all the moves they made there. And because of the playoff-type hockey you're referring to, and also just the fact they get in sync, maybe that helped them too. But I was so unimpressed with Tampa's pushback, will, ability to handle adversity in that series. It was striking.
Well, a lot of people have made that point this in the last few days since that series ended that, you know, Tampa cruised through the regular season, you know, 62 wins and, you know, they didn't really have to deal with a lot of adversity. How much does that play into that loss, do you think, that they couldn't just, you know, find, you know, we were talking at the beginning of the show about the Bruins, so like trying to find that next gear. Tampa really didn't need a next gear all season long.
No question. They didn't. I mean, they could turn it on, it seemed like, in the regular season when they needed to. Case in point, that Bruins game where they were down a couple of goals, they ended up winning down there in third period. Felt like they could turn it on. Couldn't do that. I do give a lot of props, though, to Columbus for what they were able to do structurally, especially on the road. John Tortorella went to a real, real lockdown neutral zone, and there was no room for them to maneuver. And because of that, and the injury to Hedman, too, I mean, was just huge. You know, they want to exit the puck out of their zone, and Hedman, he never seemed right the two games that he even played in. But Tampa just didn't seem to be able, especially their skilled players, Stamkos and Kucherov, could not figure out, could not understand that, you know, less is more type of thing. And they just couldn't get around it. I mean, even a guy like Braden Point, who I'm just, you know, just an enormous fan of, he couldn't get anything going. So they all were looking to try to do it themselves or looking, you know, trying to do too much. And that is never a good thing. I mean, if you're led in the playoffs in scoring by Eric Chernak, defenseman, who, by the way, I think is a hell of a young defenseman, he led him with three assists. I mean, are you kidding me? Coming off of the season that they had, that's very telling.
As far as Columbus goes, I mean, after the trade deadline, and they were extremely active, and in the weeks after the trade deadline, it looked like they had perhaps made a terrible mistake in not going in the other direction, but they put it all together at the right time. Are they now a threat to go really deep?
They have to be considered, especially, Ryan, considering what we're seeing so far. I mean, who knows who's a threat? But on the other hand, you say, look at the way they're playing and look at the depth that they have. And, you know, if Matt Duchene, who's playing for his his hockey contract. I mean, he's up for a big deal potentially, a real big deal. I mean, he's got 7 points through four games. If he can continue this type of pace, holy smokes, you know, he could put himself into that next level money. Now, they got nice performance during the regular season from Seth Jones. I thought he was really good, but Werenski was MIA at times. Werenski now has finally come together, and that's helped catapult the power play back from pretty bad to really good stuff. They're getting depth production. It's amazing. You know, Josh Anderson's doing his role. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago. He's the type of playoff player. Boone Jenner, the type of playoff player. I mean, even a guy, you know, a role player like Riley Nash was starting to step up and do things, and we remember seeing him for a couple of years in the Bruins uniform. He started stepping up and playing his role more effectively. There was, I mean, nobody on their team that played in the first round except for one player, a depth defenseman, a kid by the name of Adam Clendenning, who came in due to injury. Nobody played under 12 minutes for this team. I mean, Dzingel averaged 12 minutes, and that was the lowest. So they're getting everybody contributing.
You mentioned out west, Makar sliding into the lineup out there in Colorado. What a week that kid has had. You know, Hobie Baker, national championship game, goes, you know, I guess had some travel issues just trying to get out there for his debut. Had to drive to Toronto to catch a flight and all that. And he gets there and, you know, only scores a goal in a playoff game in his debut. No big deal, right?
And he's only a plus four in his three games that he's played. And his first game, I think it was, I'm going to say 12 and a half, not even 13 minutes he played, and that's understandable. But then he's an 18-minute average. I mean, it's unbelievable where he's at. And the way that he skates, the way that he accelerates, the way that he views the game, visualizes it, is next level. He's an NHL player, no doubt about it. Yes, there will be bumps here and there, no question, ups and downs. But he's a real deal type player. He's sliding into this lineup, Ryan and fellas, and making them an even better team, an even deeper team. Now you've got an offensive guy in the back end in Tyson Barry and one unit, and now you've got Cale Makar on another unit. I mean, he is the kind of guy, once he's comfortable, Cale Makar will control play when he's on the ice.
Team that didn't make the playoffs made some news this week, the Detroit Red Wings, bringing Steve Yzerman in. How big of an impact do you see that having, and is he going to be able to build the kind of program in Detroit that he did down in Tampa?
I'd like to think that he can, given that he has similar ownership in Detroit that he had in Tampa. With Jeff Vinnick, you know, Mr. Vinnick brought in a whole new attitude down to Tampa. That was a dumpster fire for a couple of years down in Tampa before he got there, and then he made great decisions. One of them bringing in Steve Yzerman right at the top. Yzerman obviously needed the year to kind of be back home, and home has been Detroit for him. He was commuting. He had residence in Tampa, but half his wife regularly lived in Detroit. One or two of his, or I think all three of his daughters were in Detroit. Now one is out of the area, but so he's regularly going back there to see them. So now he gets some stability. This makes huge sense. They have the resources financially. They have the new building. They've got a lot of stuff there. Now he's got to rebuild the team, but give him a couple of years. Steve Yzerman's big about hiring the right people. You know, will he try and get a few people from Tampa? You know, a guy like Pat Verbeek to come up and be with him in Detroit. Time will tell. He hires the right people, Ryan. I don't see any reason why in a couple of years he doesn't have that organization back at it again.
Well, Billy, since you and Ryan are talking about Detroit, and this is probably a conversation we should have once the playoffs are over in greater depth. If you look at the Atlantic Division, things are a-changing. Joel Quenneville's in Florida. Steve Yzerman is now in Detroit. You know, Jeff Blashill got an extension, but obviously his services going forward 3-4 years down the line, that's an unknown. Who's going to be the head coach in Buffalo? Is that going to be an established National Hockey League name? At this point, I'm not sure if it is. But the overall picture in the Atlantic Division is changing.
Significantly.
It's getting that much tougher, right? I mean, a tough division is getting even tougher.
Yeah, no question. You know, Judd, you bring up the reality that, or the statement that Blashill got a 2-year extension, if I remember correctly, it's a 2-year deal. That he got, and I don't know, the cynic in me says, did Steve Yzerman have to not agree into that? I don't know. I have no idea if he did or didn't, but it's just a 2-year deal. So even if it's 1 year and Steve Yzerman doesn't like the direction that it's going again, you know, all they're going to do is pay him out for that one extra year. You have a guy there in Dan Bylsma, you know, could he be up? I don't know. Rumblings of Dan Bylsma's name, by the way, side note, it's rumored that Bowling Green State University is a head coach there. That's where he played his college hockey. I don't see that happening. I think Danny wants to get back behind the bench full-time, behind the head coach in the NHL. He's an assistant in Detroit. It is changing in the Atlantic, and you have some good teams. Florida, we all thought, you know, should be a better team than they were. Now they have Joel Quenneville. Let's see if he can elevate them to the next status. You know, Montreal had a better year than I thought that they would. Can Claude Julien and Marc Bergevin elevate them to a higher status? The Atlantic is brutally tough, and it's going to be, you know, we saw, you know, Tampa was off the charts good regular season, no good in the postseason. They're going to probably look to tweak things here and there. They're going to have to make some changes there, too, for salary cap stuff. So a lot of change, but a really, really good division.
All right, let's finish up on the game you're off covering today, Capitals and Hurricanes, is one of your 87 jobs. Series tied up at 2. Carolina has come back and evened up that series. Should the Capitals fans be a little concerned right now?
Yeah, absolutely. They should be, especially given the fact, you know, a few things. One, they've seen many of these so-called mighties have fallen. That's one thing. Let that be a sobering reality for the Washington Capitals. Two, and while the Caps played pretty well in game one and two, Carolina played really well in game three and then actually had a really strong defensive effort in game four. Mrazek seems dialed in. He made a big save at the end of game four against Kuznetsov. He's been pretty quiet the last couple of games for Washington. I think he'll be a key factor tonight if the Caps are going to win, but he made a save with 3 minutes remaining. And let's not forget that T.J. Oshie is out of the lineup right now after the Warren Fogle hit the other day. So Oshie could be out a long time, regardless whether it's long or not. He's out for the next couple of games for sure. He's an important factor for them. There still is a belief, and I would say that Washington in a seven-game series should be the better team. Does that mean they're going to win? I don't think so, or I don't know, because I got to tell you, I know that the Carolina Hurricanes think that they can do it. They've got an amazing performance so far from Jacob Slavin. He's right up there, averaging just about 26 minutes of ice time in the Stanley Cup playoffs so far. The D-men like Dougie Hamilton are producing. He's got 4 points on 2 goals, and they've had their depth going. They're missing some fourth liners or some guys, and so their fourth line is a little weaker. You know, they don't have Michael Ferland in their lineup. Svechnikov waiting to hear where he's at from his concussion protocol. But this is a believe team right now, Ryan. So the Capitals should be scared or concerned and not take it for granted.
All right, Billy, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You got it. Be well, guys. Take care.
All right, Billy Jaffe of Nesson joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. We've got another hour of Bruins talk still to come here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Your calls, 617-779-0985. It's Johnston, Surratt, and Beers all here in studio with you up until 11 o'clock here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Press the right hand, save. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Just to play a solid road game. I think, you know, we know how to do that. Try to score one or two more goals in May. That's about it. Yeah, I think, you know, we just play our game and play it as well as we can, and then results, whatever happens, happens. We can live with it.
Hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you. 617-779-0985. Here a little of Tuukka's thoughts to this. But what have you thought about Tuukka's performance in the postseason so far?
He's been fine.
It's been good.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of goals here and there that you just maybe you hope he can come up with, but he's certainly not the reason they're down 3-2. I look at the goal in game one that Nylander scored, kind of hoping he comes up with a save in that situation. He did stop Tavares later in the period on another breakaway.
Yep.
I mean, it seems like a long time ago, but there was one other one. Well, you know, Matthews' goal the other day, but the Bruins win that game. It's Matthews. He's in a great shooting position. Sometimes the shooter deserves a little bit of credit, but that one kind of slipped through his arm. But he's been good. I thought Anderson was outstanding at the beginning of the series when he needed to be. And then he dipped a little bit in maybe games 3 and 4. And yesterday, he was good, but
he didn't have to be great.
Yeah. So, you know, that's on the Bruins.
Yeah, I mean, game 4, you mentioned the goal the other night, but
Toronto wasted a game out of him in game 2 because he was the only reason that game was so close. I mean, that game should have been a blowout. So, you know, I mean, he made some outstanding
saves. Anderson,
I'm talking about Anderson. And, you know, Toronto wasted that game by him, and then he dipped a little bit. I thought in games 3 and 4, the Bruins took advantage of one of those days. But, you know, he wasn't the reason that they lost one of those games, Anderson. And I don't think it was the other way around either for Rask. You know, there's a couple saves here and there that you hope that he comes up with. But there haven't been any, like,
but there
really
have been times,
soft,
I mean,
leaky goals. I mean, it's just
game 4, Toronto was peppering him at points of that game when they were trying to come back. And he was you know, coming up with big saves when they needed him.
I don't think he had chances on either one of those goals yesterday. I mean, obviously we documented the first goal and what we thought was one of the reasons. But it was also a great pass from Muzzin. And, you know, it's Matthews, who's now got 4 goals in the last 3 games, I think you said, right, Judd? Yeah, so, and then the other one's a 3-on-2. You know, you hope he can push off and get to it, but that's a well-executed 3-on-2, and the Bruins weren't able to defend it the way that they wanted to.
You mentioned Auston Matthews. The series that he's having this year versus last year when
was
pretty invisible.
This year, not only the points are showing up for him, but he's playing 200 feet. You know, he's playing both ends. Just a good example was the game-winning goal last night. I mean, he's there in support of his defenseman. He's not blowing the zone. He's not looking to get going offensively. He's there for Hainsey. Hainsey's under a little bit of pressure. It's a short pass. He doesn't get a point on the play, but he makes the play coming out of his own zone. And I think that's a good example. He's back here. He made a good defensive play last night, maybe on Pastrnak, I believe it was, coming to the net. So he's been somebody that has bought in. And whether that's a Tavares effect, you know, Tavares can be a little guilty of kind of going one way, you know, during the season as well. But he's bought in. And I don't know if there's a little leadership involved there. They're a year older. They've had it. You know, they've been in the league 1 year more. They had to deal with disappointment last season, last couple of years, in fact. So this is a team that is starting to grow. And like I said it at the top, I give them a lot of credit for the way that they've played in this series. Now it's up to the Bruins to find a way. And Matthews deserves a lot of credit for the way that he's played at both ends of the ice.
He's seen some different matchups. He's been harder on the puck. I think that was part of the issue for him in the first couple of games, that it was pretty easy to either knock him off the puck or poke it off the puck.
He's noticeable in a defensive end in a good way.
He is.
You know, he's been noticeable in the past on the defensive end. And not a good. Not that he was just bad there. Just he's developing. He's growing and learning. And he's been good.
617-779-0985. Let's go to Greg. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, I don't want to hear Bruins fans crying about the goal not getting overturned last night. They had plenty of opportunities. They were the beneficiary of a bogus tripping call in the first period. They had plenty of power play opportunities. They just played soft last night, and they just played flat. And in the end, it didn't go their way.
I mean,
I think we're stating what we believe is, it's not whining. To me, it's here.
Well, as you said, if they take that goal off the board, there's no guarantee the Bruins go on to win the game.
The first period has no bearing on a goalie interference call in the third period. So did they have power play opportunities? Absolutely. And did they do anything with them? 2 of the 3, no. I thought they generated a couple chances on the second one that they had. Bergeron had a good look. Pastrnak had a one-timer. But they didn't do enough on the first and especially the third one. I hated the third one.
Third one was terrible.
Yeah. So, I mean, they had 3 power plays of Toronto's 1. That's all very true. And they weren't able to get the job done with their power play. We needed to see more 5-on-5 throughout that game. But they had chances. No question. You know, there was opportunities for them. And they didn't take advantage of them. And like you said, yes, there's no guarantee if that goal is called correctly, no goal, that they go on and win. Who knows? You can't predict that. But it should have been a no goal. I mean, it's not whining. It's
reality. Let's go continue with the power play because that's what Paul wanted to talk about. Hey, Paul, you're up on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. How are you? Good morning.
Good.
Seeing the power play last night being how horrible it was, why not put Krejci and then take Johansson out? It has worked for them before.
Personnel on the power play.
Yeah, Krejci's played. He played on that power play unit when either Bergeron was hurt or when Pastrnak was hurt. You know, that guy down low, if that's going to be – so a lot of the plays originate from the right wing side. Okay, and you don't want a righty down low by the goal line there. You need a lefty down there. And Johansson, DeBrusque, Heinen have all spent time in that position. Krejci has not played that position right there. So if you're gonna have Krug and Marchand making plays from the right wing side, you need a lefty down in that spot right there. They've moved Johansson there instead of DeBrusque the last couple of games. What they do tomorrow, I don't know. You know, DeBrusque has been there a lot of this year. They wanted Johansson to have him give a little bit of a look in that spot. That's not why. You know, that's not why the power play wasn't working. They were way off, way off. They had some trouble entering the zone. They had trouble coming up the ice on a couple of occasions. Passes weren't crisp for whatever reason.
A little bit of miscommunication, I remember, on a couple of the second period power play opportunities where usually they have a checklist of, okay, I'm going here. If that's not open, I'm going here. You know, where certain guys were. As far as David Krejci on that power play, Bruce Cassidy's talked about it in the past, where he typically sets up is where Pastrnak is.
The power play has been outstanding all year, and it's been a factor in this playoff series that when they've scored on the power play, they've generally stood a good chance to win. It let them down yesterday. I don't see them making major changes going into tomorrow.
But that's, I mean, can they be successful without their power play? I mean, this team has been reliant a lot of the season on that power play. Five on five, they're not.
Second half of the year, not as much.
Sure.
I'm saying the 5-on-5 improved.
Yeah.
Your power play is not going to always score, but what it can do is generate momentum for you. The first one, I think it helped, but it was certainly late in the period. They had opportunities to execute and didn't. A little spotty in the second period.
They had three. The second one was their best because Bergeron had a point-blank chance, and there was another chance for Pastrnak on a one-timer that Anderson made two good saves on, two very confident good saves on.
I know as much as people want to focus on the way they played in Game 2, which was fabulous at TD Garden, I think in Game 4, that's essentially what the Bruins want to be able to try and execute as they look ahead to Game 6. Break the Leafs down. Break Freddie Anderson down. Shoot the puck. Puck retrieval, Toronto has not been adept at coverage once that shot has been delivered and Freddie Anderson starts to scramble. So it's up to the Bruins to get those pucks on net and for puck retrieval.
Well, and so much of that, too, is based around the fact that they got out to an early lead in that game, too. Because we were talking earlier about how committed defensively, surprisingly so, that Toronto has been. If you get you get them down 2-0, they have to break out of that a little bit.
Yes, that's true. But thinking back to Game 4, all right, so that's a power play goal. Charlie McAvoy sneaks in. He catches Kasperi Kapanen not watching. He sneaks into the right circle, gets a silky dish from Charlie Coyle, and he bangs it home. But the second goal, I thought, was emblematic of the way that the Bruins want to play.
Yeah, and the other part of it, too, is we haven't really touched on it much, but so if Toronto has a certain way that they play in the neutral zone, if they're going to try to stretch pass, we've talked about the defensemen staying on the right side of the puck or the right side of the Leafs players when they're looking for that stretch pass. And if they don't even get the stretch pass, they're coming up with support. So when the Bruins do create turnovers in that area, how quickly can they counter? Toronto's put pucks behind them. They're trying to get in there on the forecheck, trying to disrupt things. But if you make the right plays, if you defend very well in the middle of the ice in the neutral zone, how quickly can you counter before Toronto has time to get themselves back into position? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And when you're not attacking with a lot of speed, they're in position coming back into the zone. I think when the Bruins have attacked with some speed, there's been some things there for them. Certainly, I think their strength during the season has been the ability to really attack from below the dots, below the tops of the circles, maybe work it from low to high and get those shots through. But what you do, controlling the puck and really making the Leafs work in the defensive zone, we didn't see nearly enough of that, especially yesterday.
All right, we'll continue with more of your calls coming up. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That was probably my biggest beef, less about the play of an individual player, but the group not generating enough offense with shots or shot recovery situations where we could
take advantage of coverage. We just turned down too many shots, in my estimation.
Some of what we've been talking about, you hear from Bruce Cassidy last night. Passing up opportunities, you know, not putting enough pucks on the net, not shooting with purpose, things of that nature, as Bob had mentioned earlier this morning as well. 617-779-0985. What does Bruce Cassidy come up with for Game 6? How does, you know, what does his lines look like? What do we... you know, we were talking about the power play. Do you see personnel decisions there? Do you see personnel decisions up and down the lineup? Do you, you know, somebody asked earlier, does Charlie Coyle wind up on a wing with Krejci in Game 6? I mean, everything's on the table now. I mean, you got to find something that works here. You got to win two in a row, but you can't win two in a row until you win one.
You know, another thing we didn't talk about, Ryan, was a couple games ago up in Toronto, Game 4, and Patrice Bergeron's ice time, 14 and a half minutes. He was higher last night. You know, he's back on it last night, but you got to wonder a little bit of what's going on.
I mean,
there.
This time of year, you never know, right?
Yeah.
Guys, a guy goes into a slump. It could be because he's in a slump. It could be because
he's beat up. Yeah. When was the last time we saw him get 14 and a half minutes in a game?
In a playoff game.
Charlie Coyle played three more minutes than Bergeron did.
In Game 4.
He did. Yeah.
Let's go to Richard in Danvers. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Yes, good morning. I had a question on the Bruins' goal that was reviewed. Was that a coach's challenge?
Yes.
Which, the goal against the Bruins?
No, the goal for them.
For?
The
no.
They scored.
That was a league-initiated review.
At that time of the game, it's all league-initiated.
What is it like the NFL? It was like a two-minute? Because it wasn't very clear. I was there.
Yeah.
I didn't hear it.
It's late in the game.
Who challenged it.
And if Babcock had challenged... If it was a little bit earlier in the game and Babcock had challenged and they lost it, then they would have been given a minor penalty, actually. But it was league-initiated, so it's, you know, they're taking a close look at it. It was not initiated by Babcock.
Yeah, somebody had asked that question this morning as to, you know, should there have been a penalty at the end of the game, same as in the NFL, you get to the end of the game, the league takes over all that stuff so that you don't have to worry about, you know, whether there's a coach's challenge or not. So that's why they looked at that.
The Bruins did not have is they didn't have a timeout. I mean, they ended up getting it because it took so long to figure out if it was offsides or not. But they didn't have a timeout because they challenged the goalie interference and lost, so they lose their timeout.
Right. But that actually, you know, that challenge or that review actually worked in their favor because they were able to get their guys fresher at the end of the game than they wouldn't have had. They didn't have the timeout otherwise. But that's another thing that we've talked about this in the past, is that for the fans who are at the game especially, there's no real explanation as to what's going on. I mean, this guy's sitting in the stands just wondering. And sometimes even if you're sitting at home, you're wondering, like, what exactly are they looking at?
The league struggles with this.
I don't understand why, because it's just as simple as turning on the mic and saying, here's what we're going to look for.
This is why, because I think the National Hockey League in general still struggles with how to sell the game. It's fabulous. And in the playoffs, in the first round, it has been absolutely sublime.
Yep.
Awesome in the playoffs. I mean, there is no league in the playoffs that holds a candle to what you're seeing. We're in the first round.
There's a chance that every underdog can win.
Yeah.
But there's
a possibility.
They just don't grasp how to harness that and sell it. They don't.
Let's go to Tim. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, gentlemen. Good morning. How are we today?
Good.
So I just had a quick thought. I was at the game last night, and I wouldn't consider myself a hockey savant by any stretch of the imagination, but I just thought that Patrice Bergeron might be playing a little under his potential. What do you guys think? I'll hang up.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think there's something bothering him. I really do. I mean, we just mentioned it, 14 and a half minutes in Game 4.
Yeah, that doesn't happen for no reason,
bothering him,
right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's not like, you know, we decided to cut his ice time tonight. I mean, that's not the kind of guy
there's some help that needs to be there as well. You know, he had some chances last night. He actually had a couple decent looks from that slot area. I thought Pastrnak, you know, off of his game a bit yesterday, especially... They set such a standard for themselves, how good they are, Marchand and Pastrnak, and it was there in little spurts, you know, little chances. But, you know, we talk about things that change the game, right? Marchand makes a pretty good move. Gardner stays with him, but they back the D in, and Krejci hits the crossbar, I mean, that changes the game there. It's a scoreless game. Nobody's, you know, there's little things that change the game here and there. But, you know, we start, if you look at Bergeron, try to examine, he was back up to 19-plus minutes, I think it was last night. So, you know, hopefully okay. Maybe it was, who knows? I don't want to speculate what it may have been. Maybe it was nothing, but I doubt that. I highly doubt that when he's only getting 14 and a half minutes.
How about Pasternak? Because, you know, he's been, he's had some decent plays, but he's also had some, when we've been talking about the guys who just kind of don't look like themselves or making decisions that they don't normally make. Pasternak's right at the top of that list for me. Is he's making plays and making passes that we don't normally see him.
We made a great pass last night to Krejci for the goal, but that had to get through some skates and sticks as well. I think they've tried to pass through a lot of skates and sticks here through this series, and that just kind of echoes what Bruce Cassidy was just saying about passing up opportunities to put pucks on net and put them on net the right way and then being able to get to them. So, you know, you may have to kind of dumb it down and simplify things a little bit here for tomorrow night and see where you end up, but, you know, play the game the right way in those areas. And, you know, I think Judd used the term break them down, you know, defensively and try to get to them that way.
The only thing with Pasternak that stands out for me, there's a tempo that he plays with. There's a speed that he plays with and without the puck. It hasn't always been there for him. We certainly saw it in game four. And listen, Toronto, Jake Muzzin, Nikita Zaitsev, and the group that's checking against him, they've done a good job of trying to limiting his time and space. If there's a way for him to create some space, to skate a little bit more, create a little bit more tempo in his game, I think that's going to help.
Jim, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing? Couple things. I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like the fans in Boston just don't seem to be into it. I've been looking around at a lot of the other games, and this is a moot point. This isn't a big deal. But it just seems there's a lack of energy in the stands. I don't know if it's, you know, ticket prices and you're getting a lot of the pink hats in there or whatever. But anyway, that's not a big point. My main problem is I'm seeing a lot of physicality in the middle of the ice, people mucking it up, things like that. What I'm not seeing is when the puck's dumped in, you know, our team going in there and being the first one to the puck. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, letting the defenseman get to the puck and then, you know, the Bruin will try to sweep behind them. Whatever happened to, you know, going in hard and then feeding it out front? It just seems like I'm not seeing a lot of that. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. Thanks.
I certainly didn't see a lot of it yesterday. And even though you go back to a couple of the other games, some of it, you know, if you're hemmed in your own zone for a little while and then you finally get out and you dump the puck in, you're going for a change. you know, you're not in there quickly on the forecheck. I think, you know, I saw some D for Toronto kind of cheating back, you know, expecting that puck to go to a certain spot and cheating back and getting back there first. And it gives them an extra second or two to make a play. We touched on it earlier when, you know, if it's not a smart dump, then Frederik Andersen's active and coming out to play it. You know, if you just lag the puck behind the net, he's going to go out, play it, make one pass of the D, and, you know, now they're moving up the ice. So smart dumps, you know, whether it's a soft chip into the strong side D's corner so you can get in there, you force that other defenseman to have to come all the way across to make a play. Now you're coming at them with some speed where you can get in there and forecheck. And then I don't think they won enough pucks in the offensive zone yesterday. Certainly yesterday they didn't. I mean, there were some battles in that offensive zone or the Leafs defensive zone where the Leafs came away with the puck. And so that area is certainly has to be far better than it was yesterday. And that being said, it was still scoreless after two periods.
which brings me back to his first point, by the way, which is, I mean, the fans have been ready to go.
Well, they were into it in game two, Ryan. They were into it in game two because the Bruins pulled them into it with the way that they
played. Well, that's what you got to give them something to cheer about.
They were out of it in game one because there was nothing to cheer about, and they were out of it in game yesterday. There wasn't a lot going on yesterday.
It was not like they show up ready to go. After that, like, you got to give them something to bring them out of their seats. And, you know, when the Bruins come out in this first period running guys through the wall in game two, that's going to keep the crowd involved. If it's nothing, and, you know, you're not generating chances, and you're not being
game on a
physical.
Saturday night in game two also helped.
That does help. A nice lot day. Of time to get lubricated. get nice and loose. Danny, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Morning. Thanks for having me on. First of all, I'm going to say tomorrow you go with your three lines. You put the original Pasternak and Bergeron line together. I'm going to put Johansson with Krejci, and I'm going to put Coyle with Heinen, and I guess Backes. But, you know, these are what these two guys were brought in here to do, and let them do it. Other point I wanted to make, people have been talking, you guys, this morning about how Toronto's defense suddenly has gotten so much better. I think after game one, when they were pushing them game one, and it burned them a few times. They got behind them. They got a couple of goals that, you know, Tavares, and you know what I'm trying to say. And I think since then, they just haven't been putting the same pressure on them. Well, tomorrow I'll put the same pressure on them because that's how they can be exploited. They can be beat.
All right. Appreciate the call, Danny. I mean, that's, again, I think, you know, it's how you look at these games sometimes is, oh, the Bruins aren't doing enough. Well, are the Bruins not doing enough? Is Toronto doing, you know, is Toronto just elevated their game? And that's kind of the chicken and the egg question.
So Ron Hainsey had mentioned when he was asked why the five-man units have been so much better here in the playoffs, he said these were changes that the Leafs started to make at the tail end of the season when they started to swoon. He's like, we were sort of on this path for a while. It may have taken a while for it to finally take hold, and it has here in the first round, at least to this point. But I think that what the Bruins have illustrated is when they do generate pressure, when they put pucks in the right areas, or when they shoot with purpose for rebounds on Freddie Anderson, you can break them down. We've seen it in fits and starts, whether it's Ron Hainsey or Jake Gardner or Travis Dermott, even Nikita Zaitsev. That they are susceptible to giving away pucks, but you have to be able to put it in the right spot to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Bottom line is the Bruins. You know, when you talk about will in the playoffs, they got to find another gear. They have to find another gear because it was missing yesterday. You know, and it's been there in small samples. You know, throughout the series, but they have to find another gear here tomorrow. You know, bring this thing now. I mean, there's little tinkering that's done from game to game, and I'm not talking about lineups. I'm talking about, you know, the way that you play, the way that you make some small adjustments here and there. But there's really no secrets right now. So it's the will. It's, you know, put the puck in the right area, win a battle, get to the net. I mean, it's pretty – when you break it down and all the other things that have to go on in a game, who's going to do that better?
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub, the Sports Hub Hockey Show. It is a Saturday afternoon as we get set for Game 6 tomorrow night, or tomorrow afternoon now, as the Bruins try to fight their way to a game 7. That's what it comes down to. Are they going to have enough in the tank to get this thing back to the Garden on Tuesday night? Let's go to Valerie in Malden. Valerie, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Good morning. As far as that goalie interference call goes last night, you guys are right. I mean, there's no guarantee that the Bruins win. And as far as that previous caller who mentioned the Garden, what energy is in the building when they're playing like that? To me, they're just getting a little too cute. They need to throw it on the net with purpose, and they need to be able to play below the goal line and pin the Toronto defense in. I mean, they just have to reach down and find another gear. It's as simple as that. And then also, DeBrus doesn't look right at all. I just don't know what it is, but ever since that Kadri thing, he has not looked right at all. I'll hang up and listen.
I tend to agree. You know, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but Jake DeBrusk's health to me is a question mark. After that hit, I don't know how, you know, a guy takes a shot like that and it doesn't impact going forward. Like, I don't know how you, I was surprised. Let's put it. I know that the NHL has rules about this, and I worry about the health of these players and all of that long term. But I was really surprised that Jake DeBrusk didn't wind up sidelined after that shot. Same way I was really surprised Torrey Krug after he took that hit from Muzzin and went helmetless into the wall. Same thing. I expected he's going to be out for a little bit. How is he not in the concussion protocol? You assume that everything's okay. If a guy's on the ice, I mean, you got to assume that he's good enough to play and that everything is okay, or at least it's okay enough that he's going to be able to fight through it. But that's, DeBrusk hasn't looked like the same guy. And that's, that is a question. We were talking about that. It's just part of the time of year, right? You get this with Bergeron, as Bob brought up earlier, that Patrice Bergeron only plays 14 minutes in a playoff game. You got to wonder about, what kind of health he's got. I wonder about Pastrnak. Is the hand bothering him? Is that part of the reason why his game has been a little off? I mean, you don't know. It's kind of the frustrating thing about these series is you go through game after game after game, and you might see a guy who just looks like he's not playing well, and this guy's, he's not contributing enough, whatever. And then you find out afterwards, oh, by the way, Patrice Bergeron's playing with a punctured lung, or this guy's knee's been killing him for the last, few weeks, and he can barely walk when he's off the ice, but, he's been gutting it out. I mean, that's part of what makes the Stanley Cup playoffs so great, is that these guys are willing to play through everything they possibly can. It's just a question of, finding out after the fact. And I do kind of feel like we'll find out after the fact, if the Bruins don't win this series, that we'll find out after the fact that, yeah, some of those guys are a little bit more beat up than we thought. Let's bring in Joe Haggerty now from NBC Sports Boston. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Hags.
Hey, Ryan, what's going on? Yeah, I think after the playoffs are over, we'll definitely find out that, some guys were beat up in the series. And I think you can see it on the ice, too. Like a guy like Torrey Krug, in my opinion, he looks like he is less than his usual self in this series. And, that's been affected, certainly, the Bruins' offense, no question.
Yeah, I mean, the original question was about DeBrusk, but DeBrusk, Krug, Beersy mentioned Bergeron earlier today.
I was going to say Bergeron isn't moving around like he usually does. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what makes the playoffs great, is that these guys are going to play. If you give them the opportunity, they're going to play, but they may not be at their best. But it doesn't take anything away from the fact that, look, Toronto's outplayed them in this series, right? Through five games, Toronto deserves to have the lead in this series. I don't think anybody can question that.
No, they do. And not only, have they been the faster team, and clearly that has driven a lot of what we see on the ice from a pace and a tempo point of view, but, take game five last night, for instance. You would have expected going into the series that a defensive grudge match, a kind of an ugly game, a tight sort of playoff game that was low scoring, no score going into the third period, you would automatically assume that's going to be playing into the favor of the Boston Bruins, and that's going to be, something that they're going to have a lot more success with than the Maple Leafs would have. 20th in the league in defense, allowed 3 goals a game during the regular season. And, not only the speed, but I think the Leafs have really shown that defensively they're a lot better than they were reputed to be, and certainly that they were last year when they played the Bruins in the playoffs, that they're more battle-hardened than they were last year, and that, some of their young star players are more ready for the Stanley Cup playoff atmosphere and are ready to flourish in it. And, Austin Matthews scores that first goal in the third period to sort of break things open last night. And that's 4th goal of the series. And he's been a far better player and a far more dominant player at times than he was a year ago. And, that becomes a big factor in the series. I think he's been the best player for either side, as far as offense goes, and as far as a guy that has provided something.
And, you know, the Bruins need somebody to step up like that on their end, and it hasn't really happened yet. We saw Pastrnak explode for a couple games in Game 4, and we saw Tavares and Jake Muzzin get dinged up a little bit defensively for the first time in that Game 4, and you wondered if that was going to be a turning point in the series and if the Bruins had figured out some things. But, you know, it goes right back to Game 5 where they're not showing much offense at all, looking kind of slow compared to the Leafs. And once again, no goals from Pastrnak, no goals from Bergeron, no goals from Marchand, and no wins for the Bruins. They just they can't beat this team in the playoffs if one of those big three doesn't go off offensively, and it proved true again last night.
All right, we talked about it earlier, so I want to get your thoughts on the Matthews goal. Did you think it should have been called back? You know, we talked about the NHL's failure to explain themselves essentially on that call, just saying, oh, it's not, you know, we're going with the call on the ice. And, you know, they claimed it was inconclusive when they looked at replays. What did you think?
I mean, he definitely made contact before the puck got there, right? So you certainly can make the argument that Hyman interfered with Tuukka Rask and that it made it more difficult for him to make that save. I think if you're going by the letter of the law and the exact, you know, the spirit of the rule or the what's the intent of the rule, I think you could have gone with interference. The problem becomes, I think, in the league's estimation, it becomes a little bit of a judgment call as to, you know, whether Rask would have been able to make that save if he was not nudged by Hyman in the crease. And, you know, a one-timer bullet from side to side from Austin Matthews, I don't think he would have been able to make that save. I doubt that he would have. And I think that, you know, factored into it. And it, you know, a lot of it comes down to, you know, that it was ruled a goal on the ice. It wasn't ruled no goal on the ice. And so you've got to have, you know, this overwhelming pile of evidence to take it away. And I don't know that, you know, it would have been a pretty courageous call to rule goaltender interference there at that point in the scoreless game in a big play like that. And the NHL didn't do it. I can see arguments with it on both sides. I don't think it was, you know, so egregious that they felt like they had to call it. But could they have? Sure, they definitely could have.
I mean, in that one and in the Calgary game last night, it felt the same way that the league essentially took the easy way out, which is we're just going to stay with the call on the ice, right? We're just, you know, we're going to wash our hands of it. Just we're going to stay out of it. Let the official, which I'm okay with. If that's good, what you're going to do, then don't have the replay. But if you're right, going to have, you know, if you're going to have the challenge system and go through all this, then you got to look at that and say, look, there's contact. Does it affect the play? I think it does. Does Tuukka Rask make that save one way or the other? I have no idea, but we don't get to the opportunity to find out because he got bumped. And that's, you know, that to me is why you have an interference rule to begin with. And that's why you have a challenge. And, you know, so I felt like they got let down. Now, again, that's not the reason they lost last night. I'm not pinning it on the league. They got outplayed, and they got outplayed. You know, they've been outplayed for a significant portion of this series, and that's the bigger issue. It's just that we don't get to see what would have happened if the game continues scoreless beyond that point.
No doubt. And, you know, I agree with you. If you're not going to have a challenge, have replay, and then strictly go by what the replay shows and adhere to that and not be affected by, you know, what ifs, if he could have made the save, you know, time and situation in the game and, you know, whether it's a really important thing or not, whether you don't want to have replay really interfere with a game like that, a playoff game that could be pivotal in the series and have it rest on you making a call on replay. Like, don't bother having it if you're going to do all that stuff. I totally agree with that. But, you know, as you said, at the end of the day, we're going to talk about it. We're going to argue about it. And I think you can go either way with this. I think it was kind of a borderline case. But as you said, they went 0-for-3 on the power play. They got 3 power plays to the Maple Leafs won last night. You know, they had plenty of chances to win that game. Krejci hits a crossbar in the second period. Like, they had a lot of opportunities. And if they were really going to seize hold of this series, I think they would have done it in that game last night. Instead, they now have scored 1 goal in 2 of their 3 home playoff games in this series, lost 2 out of 3 games in the home games in this playoff series, and, you know, are backing themselves into a corner where, you know, I think in Game 6 we're going to see them come out and probably play with the kind of desperation they played with in Game 2, play with the physicality, play with the urgency, and probably win that game in Toronto in Game 6. But I think as the series has gone on, I think we've seen that toll, that physical effort and that physicality, the toll that's being paid by the Bruins for the rest of the series with guys that are less than 100% and aren't quite what they were after that physical game. And I just don't think they're going to have it in Game 7 to be able to win a Game 7 after winning a road game and putting everything, they're all into it on Sunday, Easter Sunday in Toronto. So I looking at it right now, I think it plays out. They win in Toronto, bring it back here, and they just have nothing left in the tank in Game 7. And, you know, if it turns out to be that way, I think you do have to give credit to the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have outplayed them in the series. I think the maturation of guys like Mitch Marner blocking shots and making little plays in addition to his offense, Austin Matthews finishing off plays, being so dangerous offensively, the additions of Jake Muzzin and John Tavares and the defense that they've played and the way they've been able to shut down Boston's best players. Like, the Bruins have tried a bunch of different things, and Bruce Cassidy's tried a bunch of different things in the last few games to really change the direction of the series, change the way it's going, and it's just not working. I think when we look back on this, we're going to say, you know, this is when the Leafs kind of grew up and matured to a different level.
Are you what did you think of the handling of personnel last night? Because, look, this is through a couple of periods there, you know, as we've mentioned a number of times this morning, there wasn't a lot going on. The Bruins weren't playing with that overwhelming intensity that we were hoping, and yet some of the guys who might bring you that energy, Backes plays 4.5 minutes last night. He had 3 hits in 4.5 minutes, but he barely skated after the first period. Wagner plays 9 minutes. Achari played under 10 minutes last night. These are the guys who are, and both of them, by the way, had 3 hits also, tied for the team lead. These are the guys that would generally bring you that energy and that little extra oomph. And Cassidy wasn't rolling them out there last night to the level that he normally does. What did you think of that?
Well, I think there's desperation creeping into what Cassidy's doing. And I think he's trying to do something different in order to change the series, to get more offense out of the team, to, you know, find a way to counteract what Toronto's doing with their speed. And I kind of agree with Cassidy that, you know, you didn't see enough out of those bottom six guys at the beginning of the game. They didn't come out like a house on fire. Right. And, you know, you weren't really impressed with how they came out of the gate. And if they're not going to play that way, then you need to go in a different direction. Yeah, they had a few hits, but it was not a game two type start that they had last night, considering how important that game was and how vital it was going to be that they get that win and go up 3-2 going back to Toronto. So I understood what he was doing. The problem with that becomes that you're, you know, rolling your top guys so much that, you know, when you really need them in the latter half of the game, you saw some kind of discombobulated, tired shifts, I think, that, you know, they didn't clearly have 100% of their energy going there. So, you know, he's trying something, he's trying adjustments, and he's trying to do something to counteract what Toronto's doing. But at the end of the day, Ryan, if the other team's better than you, you know, you can coach the crap out of the game, and you're still probably not going to win if the other team's better. And if you're so reliant on a power play, and you have been all season, and it lets you down, it goes 0-3 in a game like that. I mean, you know, that's the Bruins season in a nutshell. Not a great 5-on-5 team, relies so much on the power play, and they needed it to get it done for them last night, and they just couldn't do it.
All right, Joe Haggerty from NBC Sports Boston. We appreciate the time. Hopefully, we'll see what happens. Maybe we're back here next week talking about round two.
I hope so. Columbus is a sneaky good city, Ryan. We'll see.
Appreciate it, as always. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That's going to wrap up another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. I assume we're here next week either way. We usually are, so we shall see. But hopefully we're talking about the Bruins and Columbus getting round two underway when we're back here next Saturday morning. Hope you all have a happy Easter weekend. Stick around for Murray, I believe. Jim Murray coming up next. No Gasper today, but Jim Murray will be coming up next. I know Ty Anderson's going to join him coming up a little bit later on in the program, so lots of Bruins talk coming there, as well as your Celtics hour at noon. So stick around here on the Sports Hub for the rest of the afternoon. We'll talk to you next weekend.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.